Lake Effect's Project Milwaukee Help Wanted coverage continues now on Milwaukee Public Radio. Before the break, we heard Melanie Holmes, Vice President at Manpower Group, give details and analysis of that company's annual talent shortage survey, in which almost half of the employers interviewed said they are experiencing difficulty in hiring for mission-critical positions. Meanwhile, a Chicago consultant who has worked extensively with the manufacturing and energy industries has also studied the skills gap closely and has come to a conclusion that runs counter to much of the storyline we hear. Justin Rose is a principal with the Boston Consulting Group, a global management consulting firm. The company will soon publish a report that says the skills gap is more limited than many believe, much more limited. Justin Rose, who's based in Chicago, joined Lake Effect's Mitch Tyke by phone, and he explained what he sees going on to create a gap between employers and would-be employees.
It's a really interesting question, and it's important to think about it in different dimensions. I would say that there's no doubt that there are specific instances where manufacturers can't hire the workers they need to expand or enter new markets. And that's a very real and tangible problem for them. And I have no doubt that, you know, that can severely hamper their business. I think what we're finding, though, is when you look in bigger aggregations, whether it's at larger metropolitan areas or across the nation as a whole, there's actually pretty limited evidence of broad-based endemic skills gaps that we see today.
Is it a semantic issue, or do you think there's an underlying motive for some people to be talking about a skills gap in the terms they do?
I think that it's a semantic issue to the extent that companies may be not looking in the right places or being as proactive as they could be. You know, we see examples. There's a great example that we found in an online posting, and it was someone looking to hire a worker with a four-year degree with at least a year of work experience who had bachelor degrees in biology or chemistry, experience in manufacturing, who, by the way, needed to be able to operate a forklift, lift heavy boxes, and work with hazardous materials. And they're willing to pay $15 to $17 an hour. You could certainly say, I can understand why that job would go unfilled. And is that really a skills gap? And our work would say, absolutely not. The inability to find highly skilled workers at rock bottom rates doesn't define a skills gap. It's really where companies don't have the ability to train someone, to actually work with them, to get them up to speed, where the core skills, you know, if someone can't understand mathematics or, you know, basic science, that would constitute more of a skills gap.
Well, and you also, I think, wrap in the sort of the prevailing wage question in what you define what a skills gap really is.
Yeah. So, you know, by sort of basic laws of economics, you would say if you see an instance where your highly skilled workers are greatly in demand and there's very few of them, you would expect them to get paid more. And so we built a very simple economic model that said in places where we see wages rising by more than 3% above inflation for 5 years, so not a single spike in a single year or a single decrease in a single year, but where you see sort of this long-term trend of wages rising, that's where you see skills gaps. That's really the core hub of that. And by that definition, we find that only 5 of the 50 largest metropolitan areas actually have severe or significant skills gaps. And in total, it adds up to less than 1% of the total manufacturing workforce and less than 10% of the really highly skilled workforce.
You also use a really interesting example to illustrate how the perception of a skills gap can differ. How can there be two companies looking for essentially the same type of worker from the same talent pool, and in one case a skills gap exists and the other case it does not?
So I think it really comes down to what they're willing to do and what they're willing to invest to find that skilled worker or to build that skilled worker. And so we did a survey that had some interesting findings. Companies are actually quite good at internal training and doing retraining programs for existing workers. Something like 75 to 80 or 90% of the companies that we surveyed had those types of programs. But then you start to look beyond that and you start to think about things like partnering with community colleges. Less than 50% of companies actually partner with community college to build or find and recruit skilled workers. Traditional avenues that companies would have gone to decades ago, like high schools or job placement services, those are also underutilized resources. But again, it takes some time and effort on the company's part to actually go and find those candidates, then to train them so that they can perform the really highly technical skills that are needed in manufacturing today.
Well, and this gets back to a question that I guess is outside the scope of this particular report, but I'm curious if you have an opinion on, and that is, you know, doesn't the pace of innovation always outpace the way that education is able to react? I mean, given the existence of the skills gap today, wouldn't it make sense that there's always some form of a skills gap out there?
I think that's true. I think that historically there is, you know, as we've moved from you know, very basic tools to much more automated tools to much more computer-driven tools in manufacturing, you know, there is somewhat of a lag behind what's being taught in educational institutions and what employees can, you know and be comfortable with and what's needed. And so that's a problem that you've seen over the years. Now, I will say that there's places that do a much better job of this. So if I use Germany as an example, while they still have problems, and by the way, it's interesting, in the German media, there's all kinds of cries that there's a serious skills gap and a serious skills shortage, yet they've been able to come out of a downturn quite successfully to build a, you know, increasing export economy that's based around manufacturing. And part of what they're doing to be successful there is they really have this tight linkage between the educational system and the workforce and the employers. And they're able to adapt relatively quickly and, you know, change what they're training in their schools. And that then flows through so that their workers are better prepared.
If only 5 of the 50 largest metro areas for manufacturing are showing significant or severe gaps, where are the gaps that exist? Where are gaps more pervasive?
They're much more pervasive in smaller areas. You know, I was working at a manufacturing, a steel manufacturing facility in Mississippi in the last few months. And that manufacturing facility sat in the middle of nowhere, nowhere near a population center, and required a couple thousand people to work there. And you can imagine that even when you start to, you know, allow people to drive 30, 40 miles to get to the job, it's actually difficult to find and retain the number of people you need. Now imagine another company decides to locate in this area and is starting to pull on the same skilled workers that the first company was. You can see quickly how, you know, in lower density areas that you get pretty acute skills gap pretty quickly.
The other conventional wisdom these days is that if employers in this country are unable to fill these jobs over a long period of time, they're going to go overseas. And your report seems to conclude the reverse of that manufacturers are still coming back to this country for these high-skilled jobs.
This was the most interesting thing, single point thing that I think we found. And we asked a very simple question, which said, you know, if you're considering moving either from the U.S. to outside or from outside the U.S. back into the U.S. to manufacture, how likely was it that skilled workers were the cause of that move? And 5 times more people said they were moving to the U.S. to get the skilled workers than moving out of the U.S. to get the skilled workers. And this was shocking. You know, at best, hope that it would be kind of even. But to see that 5 times more people believe that they can access skilled labor in the U.S. than outside, I found that really interesting.
Well, so let me ask you this question. Is it oversimplifying things to say that there are just some businesses out there that don't want to pay their workers what they're worth?
I think it's a tough question. And I guess I would say that I don't think that businesses are intentionally trying to short the workers or intentionally trying to buy people on the cheap. I think that as the workforce develops and as the skilled workers become more and more valuable to businesses, I think there may be some misperceptions around how much they actually are worth. And so, you know, I think that businesses frankly need to realize that these skilled workers are going to be more expensive than the, you know, the no skilled or the low skilled workers that you have working on the shop floor. They're going to be people that you're going to have to pay more to and that, you know, frankly, you're going to have to put more effort into finding and recruiting. And it's not just, you know, as simple as putting a job posting on Monster.com. You need to work with the local community colleges. You need to work with the high school. You need to build a pipeline of these workers.
So if the skills gap today is not as pronounced as we might have been led to believe, what do you see as the longer term concern?
Longer term, you know, it's a big concern for a couple of reasons. One, a number of reports we've published recently point to a renaissance in manufacturing in the United States. And that would be, you know, jobs coming back from China because the economics are becoming increasingly attractive. The U.S. being a more powerful export hub when it competes against the likes of Europe or Japan, where, you know, continued very high costs and high energy costs, high labor costs, on and on and on. And so we do see a renaissance in U.S. manufacturing, which, of course, will create demand for more and more skilled manufacturers. Beyond that, there's also big issues around just retirement. So as the population of the U.S. ages, you know, we would say in some of the key trades, the skills gap is going to multiply by 8 to 10-fold by 2020. And so, you know, while we don't view this as an issue that is acute and severe on a nationwide level today, we think unless some of these steps we're talking about to address it are taken in the next few years, that we will be facing a very acute skill shortage by 2020.
Justin Rose, thank you so much.
Really appreciate the time, Mitch. Have a great day.
Justin Rose is a principal with the Boston Consulting Group. The global management consulting firm is due to issue a report called Made in America Again, Understanding the U.S. Manufacturing Skills Gap and How to Close It. Rose, who's based in Chicago, spoke by phone with Lake Effect's Mitch Teich. Coming up next, a partnership emerges between UWM and a company needing highly skilled engineers. It's one way to close that skills gap. Lake Effect returns with that conversation right after this short break.